WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Now here's a group which has only experienced moderate success here in Britain, but which has had several big hits in the States. Singing for you, we present The Zombies.
Well, I think Americans were right about the Zombies. They were a great band, and you can hear the evidence on a new 4-CD box set that includes all their recordings as well as outtakes and BBC broadcasts. The Zombies were one of the British invasion bands that followed in the wake of the Beatles. Their first record, She's Not There, made it to number 2 on the Billboard pop chart here. The next year, they made it to number 4 with Tell Her No. Ironically, the band had already broken up in 1969 when Time of the Season became their biggest hit. My guest, Colin Blunstone, was the lead singer of the Zombies. Before he tells us what it was like to be part of the 60s British invasion, let's hear the Zombies' first single.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked, the way she had to. Told me about her. What could I do? Well, no one told me about her, though they all knew. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there.
Colin Blunstone, welcome to Fresh Air.
Terry, thank you very much.
You got to record this song after the Zombies won a contest in, I guess, St. Albans, where you were from. And you won first prize, and the first prize was an audition with Decca Records. Tell me about the contest.
The competition was held in Watford Town Hall, which was about 8 miles away from St. Albans, where we all went to school. And Watford Town Hall was quite a big venue for us. It held about 2,000 people. And because there were 10 bands on every night, they all had their supporters, and it was absolutely packed. And it was a bit like a football crowd. You know, everybody had banners and bells and rattles, and it was quite a sort of a wild place to play. And we won our heat. I think there were sort of 10 weeks of 10 bands, and the winner got through to the final, and then we won the final. It was a magical evening. I'll never forget it.
What did you sing in the final competition?
Oh, I was hoping you weren't going to ask me that. We sang a Beatles song, You Can't Do That.
Oh.
You know, I got something to say that might cause you pain. Do you remember that one?
Absolutely. I like that song a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And we sang Summertime, which went on our first album. And we did it as a sort of a jazz waltz. It was very jazzy. And we sang a couple of other songs, and I can't remember what they were.
Well, I'm going to stop you here. Now, one of the good things about the Zombies' new box set that's come out is that there's a lot of unreleased sessions on it, as well as all the released sessions.
Yes.
And there's demos on it, too. And in fact, there's a demo of Summertime, the demo that you made before you even started your recording career.
That's right.
And I thought we might listen to that. Any comments you have on this demo of Summertime? Tell us why it was in the repertoire in the first place.
Chris White, the bass player, see, everybody tells a different story, but I think this is probably true. Chris always played in rock bands, but he also played in a dance band. And they used to do Summertime in this sort of jazz waltz way. And I think he introduced it to the band. And it always went down very well when we played, often with the young kids we were playing to. You know, they liked to, at the end of the evening, they would want to have a close dance so they could have a little bit of a kiss and a cuddle. And so this would be the song we would play.
And here it is, a Summertime, a demo recording, the very first demo recorded by the Zombies.
It's summertime, and the living is easy. The fields are jumping, and the cotton is high. Your daddy's rich, and your mama's good looking. Won't you hush, pretty baby, don't you cry. One of these mornings, you're gonna wake up singing. Then you're gonna spread your wings and take to the sky. But till that morning, there ain't nothing gonna harm you. With your mommy and daddy there standing by.
That's a demo by the Zombies included on the new Zombies box set, which is called Zombie Heaven. My guest, Colin Blunstone, was the lead singer of the Zombies, one of the British invasion groups of the 60s. British invasion to us Americans, anyways.
That's right.
Why was the group named the Zombies?
Well, quite simply, because we'd been, for the first few weeks of our career together. This was just when we were at school. I think to start off with, we were the Mustangs, and we found that there are a million bands called the Mustangs. And then we were the Sundowners, and we had the same problem. And Paul Arnold, who was our original bass player, there was only one change in the band, and this is while we were still at school. He came up with the idea of the Zombies, and I think we all thought that no one else would be crazy enough to call a band the Zombies. And I think that in a way it was an act of desperation. We were just trying to find something that no one else would have thought of. So we ended up as the Zombies.
What do you think defined the Zombies' sound?
Well, I think a lot of the sound really comes from the writers. We had two unique writers in the band, and very prolific writers as well. And I think possibly, especially Rod Argent, his writers, his songs were, I think, well, truly wonderful. I think they were brilliant songs. And he also was a brilliant keyboard player. So you got these great keyboard breaks that he would keep putting into songs. Also, he was a very accomplished musician, even at an early age. He understood a lot about music, which certainly he was in a different league to me. So a lot of our chord progressions and the bass notes we put on the bottom of chords were quite unusual. And he also understood vocal harmonies, because he was in the cathedral choir until he was about 17 or 18. And if we played a gig on a Sunday night, we'd have to go and pick him up at the back of the cathedral where he'd been singing in whatever the thing had been at the cathedral, and he'd have to be taking off all his church clothes and getting into his rock and roll gear, and then we'd go off to the rock and roll gig. So I think our harmonies helped to make things a bit different as well. I think there were lots of things that contributed towards it, but the songwriting and the vocal harmonies, and then maybe there's a little bit of the interplay between Rod's writing and my voice. I mean, both of them, Chris White and Rod Argent, used to write songs for my voice.
What were the qualities of your voice that you think they wrote for?
Well, especially for those days, I sang in quite a high key, you know, compared with lots of other singers. Nowadays, lots of people do that. But I think that was one of the things. I think I tend to sing sad songs better than happy-go-lucky songs, so that often songs would have a sort of a haunting quality about them. She's Not There is probably a good example. I think they would look for that. Songs in minor keys would perhaps would be another thing they would look for. So lots of little things all added up to the zombie sound.
Yeah, a lot of the songs you sang had more to do with vulnerability than showing how strong you were.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's me.
Let's hear another one of the zombies' big hits, and this is Tell Her No. Tell us something about the song or the session.
I think, as I remember, we'd been touring with Dionne Warwick, and who you would call Dionne Warwick, and through that, we'd got very interested in Burt Bacharach's songs, and I have a feeling that Rod Argent, who wrote this song, was going through a period of being influenced a lot by Burt Bacharach. With regard to the session, we would record probably three or four, maybe five backing tracks in an evening at Decca Recording Studios, and then we would put vocals on, and it would probably be 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock at night before I got round to singing. And I always remember this session because I was fast asleep when they finished, and they woke me up to sing Tell Her No. And in fact, there's a mumbled line in the middle of Tell Her No because I was half asleep when I was singing it. And I said, listen, guys, I better just do that again because there's this mumbled line. And they said, oh, no, no, that's fine. Don't worry about that. And I've heard stories of people who, in bands, who have been trying to copy our version of Tell Her No, and they've been desperately trying to work out what the lyric is. And I have to, after 15 or 30 years or whatever it is, I have to tell them, well, you shouldn't have bothered because it's just a mumble. So there is no lyric there, really.
Where is the mumble in the song?
I'll leave it to you to find out because I can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, come on.
No, I can't remember. It's something like, you play the song and then I'll have a think about it while you're playing.
Okay, why don't we play it, you listen in, and then you tell us which the line was.
Okay.
Okay.
How funny to hear this all the way from Mary.
And if she should tell you, come closer. And if she tempts you with a charm.
Okay, that's all right. First one.
Tell her no. No, 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 no. Don't hurt me now, for her love belongs to me. And if she should tell you I love you, whoa. And if she tempts you with a charm.
That's it. Did you hear it?
Yeah, so it's the part. Yeah, go ahead.
It sort of sounds like don't love her love from your arms or something, but really it's...
I always heard it as don't hurt me now from her arms, and I figured, well, I don't know what that means, but it's all right. I get the gist of it.
Well, what it means is it was a rather sleepy zombie who was trying to do his best, but was a little bit not with it. He was amongst those not present.
I always loved your chorus of, you know, the Tell Her No's with your whoa, whoa, whoa's in it and all that. Did you sing it the same way for each take, or did it always come out different?
Well, it wasn't something that was specifically written. It was, okay, Colin, now do a little bit of something here. It would have been similar, but it wouldn't have been exactly the same.
Colin Blunstone is my guest, and he was the lead singer of The Zombies, one of the British invasion groups of the 60s. And there's a new Zombies box set that has their complete issued recordings, most of their unissued recordings, alternate takes, demos, and so on. It's a 4-CD box set called Zombie Heaven. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Colin Blunstone, the lead singer of The Zombies, and there's a new box set of the complete Zombies recordings, outtakes, demos, BBC recordings from the 60s. It's called Zombie Heaven. What was it like to be in the United States and, you know, build as a British invasion band? What did that mean to you?
Well, the surprise for me was the reaction. I mean, I wasn't particularly aware of the fact that we were part of the British invasion. I'm not sure if that term was used, certainly to me, at the time. I mean, I know the expression now, but so I can't really say I reacted to that phrase when I was there. But what was interesting to me was the enthusiasm and the huge numbers of the fans in America for all music. I mean, things were a little bit more basic back here in the UK. We would be travelling in the back of an old van. There were very few freeways in this country. We call them motorways. So we would be travelling on country lanes, vast distances in a broken down old van. It wasn't terribly glamorous, really, except we were having fun. We were 18 years old. What did we care? But then when we went to America, we were playing to huge audiences and very, very enthusiastic audiences that were screaming and screaming and rushing the stage and tearing our clothes off. And it was all pretty exciting stuff, really. Very
now,
exciting.
Do your best to be honest with me about this. What's it like when you're 19, you're a young man, you're just getting started, you know, as a man in the world and sexually and all that. And here there's like, you go from city.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. You go from city to city, and women are screaming and screaming over you. I mean, this must really give you a sense of being something else, you know. And
very
just,
lucky is the expression I was thinking of.
Right.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. Definitely, it was wonderful.
Well, I mean, how much did it go to your head, and how sometimes that type of stuff really deforms people's personalities.
Yeah, I don't think it did too much in our band, but again, it probably better if someone else judged it, because we sort of had periods of success and we had periods of not being so successful, and we were brought down to earth with a big bump. And also in the band, no one was allowed to get too carried away. I mean, we'd grown up together, and anybody who got too carried away would be slapped into place pretty quickly. It was very exciting and it was great fun. But we all still lived at home with our parents. We still lived in the little area that we'd grown up in. And we weren't really allowed to get too carried away.
When you started performing, particularly when you came over to the States and started performing, did you get a lot of advice or guidance on what to wear, what kind of haircuts you should have, what kind of eyeglasses the guys in the band should wear, all that image type of stuff?
No, we didn't, actually. And I think that image-wise, I think it was a weakness in the band. I think, you know, we were together professionally for 3 years, although we were together for 4 years at school. Towards the end of the 3 years, I think we were getting the image thing a bit more sorted out, but it had just been a natural progression for us. And I think that we needed help, I think, earlier on. How could it be any different? Our first record had been a huge hit record around the world, and some of the guys had just left school, and I don't know how much other bands thought about image, but we certainly didn't. And I wish that some shrewd character had given us a bit of help there. And then you just mentioned spectacles. Two of the guys wore very heavy rim spectacles, and at a time when, if you're in a teenage band, of course you want to look fairly attractive for people, and it wasn't very fashionable at the time for young men in rock bands to wear glasses. And towards the middle or the end of our professional career, Paul Atkinson stopped wearing those heavy rim glasses and wore contact lenses, and he was a very good-looking lad, and I think it might have helped us a little bit if he'd wore contact lenses from the beginning. But just little things like that, I think we could have looked into. And I think also She's Not There is a very charismatic song. It's eerie, almost could be a little bit sinister, and I think we could have worked on that.
Right.
Instead of which, we came with a very jolly little Tell Her No number for our second record, which was didn't seem to me to follow She's Not There very well, really.
In one article that I think was written in an American newspaper or magazine, an article that's quoted in the liner notes to the New Zombies box set, the band was described as clean-cut, quiet, well-mannered, intelligent, they behave like gentlemen. Was that considered good or a liability at the time?
Well, it's funny.
To be so clean-cut in your image, yeah.
When you met people in the media, I think they quite liked it because we turned up on time and
You didn't insult them.
We didn't insult them, we didn't spit, and, you know. But when you actually put that into an article, I think it can put people off.
Mm-hmm.
People want rascals and rogues and naughty boys, you know. And then do you know what he did? Do you know what this guy did? People love that, you know. But then they're not having to face it firsthand. So in a way, I think that it went against us a bit. Mind you, I'm saying all this with hindsight. I didn't realize it at the time. We were just making it up as we went along.
Well, I think it's time to play another record. I'm going to ask you to choose one this time around. Choose choose something you'd like to play that we haven't heard yet. Maybe why don't you choose here one of your favorite recordings on the box set? Maybe something that hasn't been issued before.
Something that hasn't been issued before.
Yeah.
How about Walking in the Sun?
Good. And tell us why you're choosing this.
Well, I'm choosing it because I haven't heard it in a long time. I remember recording it, you know, in the early sessions, sort of 1964. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think it was ever released. And I think it's a pretty good track. And I can't explain why it wasn't released. I don't remember the thinking behind that. And I wish it had been released at the time.
Okay, and this is Walking in the Sun, The Zombies, featured on the new Zombies box set, Zombie Heaven. Here we go. Colin Blunstone, the lead singer of the British invasion band The Zombies, will be back in the second half of the show. The Zombies' retrospective CD box set is called Zombie Heaven. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.